Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising?
People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Hey, good morning, friends. It is...
good morning, Amy.
It's the first time I've seen you all day. Welcome in. Thank you for being a part of our day into the afternoon. It is the Chris and Amy Show. We go until 1 o'clock. We got a phone number, 314-436-7900. On the Odyssey app, great place to be streaming us live. You can put it on your cellular phone. And directly from the app, you can leave us a voice message, which we encourage you to do. There's a button that says send a message. Record your message and send it, whatever topic we're talking about, or if something's on your mind, let us know. And we're on all the social media platforms. If you want to watch us, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, go find us.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Well, the St. Louis Board of Aldermen back at it again, reconvening today after some fireworks on Friday.
And China strikes back at Trump's tariffs, putting some levies on U.S. imports. We will be joined by WashU Economics Professor John Horn because what in the wide, wide world of sports is a tariff?
What is a tariff? Is it tariff or tariff?
It is tariff.
It's tariff. Okay. We're going to find out more about that. SLU will take on UMass tonight at 6 o'clock. So we're going to have the game here on KMOX. And this is one of those big days in baseball. It's the equipment truck day.
Oh, is it really?
It is. This is the day that the Cardinals equipment is loaded up onto trucks at Busch Stadium, and they drive to Florida.
How many trucks? Do you know, Matt?
I don't know.
No? You wonder if, do you think they just, it's equipment truck day, and they just like back up those trucks and park anywhere near Busch Stadium?
Well, yeah, they're not getting towed.
Right. What if they park in Mr. DeWitt's spot? And just say, well, we've got to load it.
No, here's what would happen. Mr. Yeah. DeWitt would find the truck. Uh-huh. He would take a photo of the license plate, and then he would send a company-wide email asking whose truck this is.
I had a friend who had a full-size conversion van, and he went to college in Boston. And because he had the conversion van, he thought, people are going to think that this is some type of work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And for 4 years, he didn't pay for parking at his college in downtown Boston. He just parked it right near the door.
Wow.
And no one ever questioned whether or not that van was
Because
it looked like a work van. Where everyone else, and you know, parking in Boston is at a premium. But yeah.
So if I get a white work van, like a big, I can just park wherever I want forever, you think? And then you know what else you have to do? You put your, the vest, the orange safety vest, you just put it up on the dashboard so that people think you're a city worker.
I've heard that if you walk
you don't
in,
get a ticket.
If you have a ladder, I heard you could walk in anywhere and no one will ask questions.
That is absolutely
but
true.
You walk into a movie theater, you can walk into any, you know, a sporting event where you don't have tickets. You just need two guys and a ladder.
That's a business. That's a business idea. Two guys in a ladder. We will rent you a ladder that you could take into places to get you in for free. All right. So as we mentioned, the Board of Aldermen are meeting again today. This is as they continue to try and figure out what's going to happen with the $294 million Rams settlement package. There are opposing ideas. And last week, Megan Green, the president of the Board of Aldermen, decided to gavel out because it appeared that the vote wasn't going the way she wanted it to. She supports a particular package. There are other alder people who support another one, and the vote appeared to not be going her way. And she said that things got unruly, and she accused a fellow alder person, Joe Vollmer, who represents the area around the hill. She accused him of drinking on the job, of being intoxicated while they were on the chamber floor, while they were discussing both of these bills. She has since apologized. She apologized to him. He had threatened legal action against her, and she was on KSDK last night.
You know, I want to, you know, sincerely apologize to Alderman Vollmer. I should have taken up any concerns that I had with him directly instead of going to social media. And, you know, I recognize that I did not live by the expectations that I try to set for other members of the board. My comments were not professional, and I take ownership of that.
So I don't know if that's a CYA kind of thing, or if she's she's really truly sorry for it, because nobody was able to corroborate what she said. Nobody on the floor also thought that Joe Vollmer was drunk. She did say in that interview with Mark Maxwell last night that she did see open bottles of tequila in a side room, but no idea who drank it, when it was drunk, or anything. Yeah. It's just a really weird thing to have happen.
Yeah, it sounds like she threw a hissy fit because she didn't get her way. I mean, this is not a split board of aldermen. This is not, we've got some Republicans and some Democrats, and Democrats really need to band together. This is a very progressive Board of Aldermen overall, not just Democrat. These are progressives, open progressives, who should have some kind of consensus or idea that while we are all here on the same political side, we should try to move forward and not make fools of ourselves, not reflect poorly on the city. It's embarrassing. And Alderwoman Ann Schweitzer, who was interrupted on last week when Megan Green abruptly ended the meeting, she was the one saying, listen, we're concerned about the Trump administration's efforts to stop some federal funding. We need to make sure that we can keep moving forward with helping out the city. All of us agree on water infrastructure and that it needs to be fixed. Let's take that $40 million we agree on and at least move forward with that. And Green just wasn't having any of it.
Meanwhile, Joe Vollmer, one of the people involved in all of this, the alder person we just mentioned, was on the Dave Glover show yesterday afternoon talking about where, in fact, they have disagreement on the floor.
Well, what we're ending up with, or what we proposed due to all the flip-flopping, was that we were going to put $40 million into the water department. Everyone agreed on that. We had, like I say, 11 votes for that. And the other, you know, we'd all love to put the $100 million into downtown, which it was a week or so ago. And then she sliced it to 74 and sliced it to 60. And that's unacceptable, especially when you have downtown people willing to do a 2-to-1 match off of $100 million. Mm-hmm. You're giving away $300 million. For downtown infrastructure, that's incomprehensible.
So when we had the mayor on last week, I brought up that they had agreed on $74 million. And I asked, why aren't you going up to $100 million? I believe they had a cap of $100 million. And the mayor said she wasn't familiar with a cap. Joe Vollmer is echoing that $100 million. He didn't specify that it was a cap. Maybe it was just the previously agreed upon number. I was under the impression that that was that the business community, the private sector, would match those funds up to $100 million. Megan Green has expressed doubt as to how the private sector will actually match those funds, or, you know, if they will do it. I'm not sure why she has that doubt. But to Jill Vollmer's point, if you're getting a match for the downtown funds, you don't want to leave money on the table.
Yeah, that's it to me, the way I see it, even though it's a little bit different because it is guaranteed that if you happen to have a contribution match from your company for a 401k, right, it is always advised to take that free money. So if you're going to put part of your salary into a 401k, into retirement, you should at least put as much in as your company is going to match. You want to take advantage of that. Again, it's free money. I understand where she's coming from. She probably wants more of a guarantee that these companies, the private companies in St. Louis, are going to match whatever is spent downtown. I understand that. I just don't know that you're going to get it. But and to me, the way I see it, mm-hmm. and I could be totally wrong about this, and you can talk me out of it, but if that's even a possibility, you probably, with the state of the city, you probably should run with it. You probably should take that possibility that private firms around the area are going to match whatever you put into downtown, because even the promise of that is better than what we have currently, which is nothing.
Yeah. So we will be following this Board of Aldermen meeting. Sean Malone, KMOX reporter, I believe, is there as well. Our friend Mark Maxwell from KSDK, he did note that the Board of Aldermen has gaveled back in. This was just of a few minutes ago. And he said, quote, "This time, a special guest in the gallery, Assistant U.S. Attorney Hal Goldsmith. He's the federal prosecutor who put three aldermen behind bars." So Hal Goldsmith's there. I don't know why, but okay. He's there.
What is it? Is he threatening them?
I don't know, but it feels ominous.
It really does feel
so
ominous.
So we will keep track of that. We'll be following it. As I said, Sean Malone is there because I'm sure there will. It's got to be, like I said. I wonder if Megan Green is going to walk in today the same way George Costanza did after he quit his job and then just showed up the next day as if it didn't happen. Just pretend it didn't happen.
This text message says the Rams money should not be used for anything that is tax related slash supported. Water infrastructure should be fixed with ratepayer monies along with getting rid of trash dumpsters and have residents have the individual dumpsters similar to county residents. I don't know what happens in the county when it comes to that. You've lived out there, Amy. Is there a difference with trash pickup? I have no idea. Like, do you notice a difference?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know. And I grew up in like unincorporated St. Louis County, and my family is out in Franklin County, so it's different with the trash pickup.
But you pay a tax, right? You pay some sort of fee directly to the refuse.
I'm going to be completely honest.
You have no idea.
I love having receipts and knowing what I'm talking about. And right now, I feel like I would speculate because, like I said, we've always done the unincorporated thing, and I think there's taxes.
Oh, I know what you do. You just burn your trash, don't you?
No, I thought you could burn your trash in Illinois.
No, that's where you can't burn it.
You can't burn leaves either. You can't burn it. Oh, you cannot burn your trash in St. Louis County. I think you can in Franklin County. Because I remember thinking, hey, we can burn stuff now.
What?
But I don't know if that's correct.
Wow.
Anybody got any tires?
I've just been wanting to burn things. That's all I care about. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. There is some polling as it pertains to the mayoral race here in St. Louis, because we've got a primary coming up in less than a month. Actually, it's a month away from now. And we have a general election happening the following month. We're going to talk about some of that polling next and where the race stands. Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Well, some interesting poll results in the St. Louis mayoral race, which is coming up, my goodness, next month. Looking at the favorable and unfavorable ratings, this is a poll conducted by Remington Research Missouri Scout between the end of January, between the 29th and the 30th of January. It talked to just under 600 likely voters, and you're looking at the favorability and unfavorability ratings of these candidates. Kara Spencer, 50% favorable, 18% unfavorable, 32% no opinion. The incumbent mayor, Tashara Jones, 21% favorable. Again, Kara Spencer had 50% favorable. Tashara Jones, 62% unfavorable, compared to Kara Spencer's 18% unfavorable, 16% no opinion for Tashara Jones. Andrew Jones also in the mayoral race, along with Michael Butler. We will be talking with Michael Butler in just a few minutes.
He's the recorder of deeds here. And I don't think this is a surprise that both Andrew Jones and Michael Butler, a lot of people, in fact, an overwhelming majority on both of them, don't have an opinion. I don't think most people know who either of them are, really. And again, Butler's going to be in with us so he can try and help make his case. So it really does, at this point, feel like a two-person race. Maybe things can change in a month. You mentioned the primary, which is happening a month from today, mm-hmm. and then the mayoral, the general election is going to happen on April 8th. So will the momentum for Spencer continue from now until then? Will the feelings on Mayor Jones soften by then? Because I think a lot of people, as we covered extensively in January, post-snowstorm, the snow removal, the trash pickup, all of these issues that were city-related, we spent a lot of time talking about how people really were upset with her, mm-hmm. and how the office dropped the ball. She did, she took a lot of criticism, rightfully. She said that she understands the criticism and she apologized for the slow response. But I think, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know what to think. My gut is to say that this will carry over for another month or two, that some of those ill feelings, especially for people who lived in Soulard or lived in South City or lived in areas where the trash pickup didn't happen or the snow, the streets were never really treated and they couldn't get around. Those people are not going to forget. You know, they are not going to forget in the next couple of months, but will everybody else? Will it be a large enough number that it affects what happens on election day? I'm not quite convinced of that yet, but I think there might be momentum in that direction.
Yeah, it's interesting. You go to the citywide favorability from the points, Kara Spencer plus 32, Tashara Jones minus 41. So again, favorability citywide, Kara Spencer plus 32, Michael Butler plus 10, Andrew Jones minus 10, Tashara Jones minus 41.
Yeah, so she, I mean,
quite a discrepancy. And remember, with the voting here, you can vote for as many candidates for mayor as you want. And then the highest vote getters, the top two, effectively have a runoff in the final election.
Yeah, but it's not good for her at this point, 2 months out, to be 41 points underwater with voters. That is really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, can she, maybe she can make that up.
I mean, here's the thing with polls. You always, always take them with a grain of salt. The bigger the number, the more you can put some weight behind it, right? This is not within that margin of error. So number, you can probably put some weight behind it. I still don't know, because it is difficult to defeat an incumbent, and people know the name Tashara Jones. And as you said, a lot of people don't vote. But even some who do aren't following the news and the reporting and the plans day in and day out. It really is, how do they feel things are going right now? And that's why this could be the worst case scenario for the mayor, because you don't have to follow the news to know your trash isn't being picked up. And you don't have to follow the news to have experienced 4 weeks of being snowed in on side streets or hitting potholes. So I will say, as far as a campaign against the mayor goes, the snow, the potholes, the trash, that's kind of worst case scenario. It's not like we're talking about cronyism or behind the scenes money that people aren't following the story.
This is the kind of thing that does motivate people to go out and vote.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, races like this that are not attached to a presidential election, the turnout is way low.
Abysmal.
It's really bad. So you have a very select small group of people who are deciding who the city's mayor is going to be. Stuff like this might motivate people to go out. And by the way, the margin of error on that poll is plus minus four with a 95% degree of confidence. So I would say those numbers are pretty close to being true in how people feel at the moment about the mayoral race. We are expected to talk with Michael Butler, recorder of deeds, who is one of the four candidates running for mayor of St. Louis. Michael scheduled to join us next on KMOX. As we have been talking, the mayoral race is happening right now. The primary in the city of St. Louis will take place a month from today, and then the election happens on April 8th. We have spoken a lot about the incumbent Tashara Jones and a challenger, Kara Spencer, but there are a couple of others who are also running for mayor. Andrew Jones is one of them, and the final candidate is Michael Butler, who is with us here in studio, the current recorder of deeds for the city of St. Louis. And Mike is with us now on KMOX. Mike for mayor is what the banner says. That is your campaign.
Sir.
Yeah. So it looks good. It's good. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Thanks
we appreciate
for having
your
me.
Time.
I might be the last on the list, but I'm the first on the ballot. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, you're not really last.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was just, he was giving you like a law firm. The anchor.
Yeah, you're the anchor.
Leg.
You're the
hey, man.
Anchor yes. in the race.
Out, yeah.
Yes.
A lot of times, you know, the most important.
And I have to say, you know, current recorder of deeds, that is the most regal of all the sounds, of all the jobs in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like you could have a trumpet blast. The recorder of deeds.
I will tell you that I know exactly what a recorder of deeds does, but could you explain it to other people who don't know what it is?
Yes. So the recorder of deeds is tasked with handling all the land deeds of the city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an elected administrator with the handle land deeds, birth certificates, death certificates, pretty much any important document you need. I have to take care of that and make sure it's available when you get there to City Hall. I've brought a lot of those documents online. I believe in 2025, you shouldn't have to go to City Hall to access your city government. So that's really improved our office and increased our revenue, increased our productivity.
Yeah. So going back to that, because we have heard a lot about how things are just moving. They move a bit slowly. It's a City Hall, not really modernized. When were you able to move everything online, and what was the old system compared to now?
The old system was a website that looked like circa 1992, had those spinning letters, if you remember that back in the day. And quickly, when I was elected in 2019, I updated the website within 9 months and then changed the state law the next year in 2020 that allowed us to bring marriage licenses online, and we enhanced the birth certificate and death certificate online services. It's important to know that COVID helped out a little bit with that. So there were some state legislators and some other recorders that weren't so big on maybe doing online services until we had a global pandemic, and they realized, hey, you're right. People shouldn't have to come to our government offices to access these documents. And we were able to move pretty fast during COVID to make that happen.
Michael Butler, you were in the Missouri House for about 6 years.
Yes.
What made you decide to be part of city government instead of doing that job?
Two things. When I was in the state legislature, I was a single, good-looking young guy, and some beautiful woman swooped me up, and I got married. So by my sixth year in the legislature, I had two kids and a wife. And going back and forth to Jefferson City was just not conducive for me. And the second thing is I have a master's degree in public administration, and I wanted to try my hand at the executive branch and run in an office and not have to beg 181 other legislators, especially Republicans, to get something done. In the executive branch, I can talk directly to people and say, hey, we can get that done for you in a couple weeks.
You're from the city of St. Louis?
Yes, all around, but mostly South Side of State Streets was where I grew up.
Grew up. So familiar with the city and some of the issues that it's facing. What do you think are the city's biggest issues right now?
I think our city is facing going back to the basics. And I hear folks talk about how they just don't feel like they're getting their tax money worth from city government. When their trash pickup, of course, their snow removal, and they're salting streets and paving streets from leaf pickup and everything around city government, liquor licenses. They feel like we can be doing much better. The second thing, of course, is crime. People want to feel safe in their neighborhoods, and in a lot of ways, people may see the statistics, but they don't feel the statistics and that crime is going down in our city. And lastly, people want better schools. So while I'm not running for superintendent, I do think there's a lot of money in city government that can go to support reducing the effects of poverty on our students.
As you mentioned, the crime numbers have been improving according to what we are getting from the city, getting from the FBI. But people don't feel it. How do you make them feel it?
We make them feel it by continuing programs that reduce poverty and focus on the root causes of crime. But also, we've got to increase police presence in certain neighborhoods, and we got to make people know that they're safe and that they have safety around them.
How does the potential state takeover of the St. Louis Police Department affect your approach to crime and policing?
It affects it greatly because we're not going to have direct control over the things we want to do. And then quite frankly, there are a lot of Republican talking points around what they want to do with local policing that do not hold St. Louis values and that go against what the community in St. Louis City says that they want. What I'm most afraid of is a focus on deportation rather than fighting crime in St. Louis, and as well as going too hard on crime and not building relationships with community is what we're seeing. So I think that'll affect as a mayor, what I'll be able to achieve as far as organizing and building a quality police department.
Just to follow up on that the state's approach to policing doesn't align with yours. You mentioned deportations. Mm-hmm. What does too hard on crime mean?
Too hard on crime means that we're going to use. Within Project 2025, which is now the president is focusing on, there's an old program called Stop and Frisk. And what too hard on crime means is that there are programs where conservative legislators want to use unreasonable searches and do and stop and frisk folks just because they think they may be a criminal. And it means that we're going to assume that people are doing criminal activity because they look a certain way rather than doing some police work to make sure that folks are actually involved in crime.
Do you think St. Louis police have the resources they need to do the job properly?
I don't. I think that we need some raises, and that's where I'm hoping that we can partner with the state government for it. They need raises, and we need better equipment. So, and that total is going to be about $38 million, about $30 million for a $15,000 raise for every single police department employee, and about $8 million for new equipment, as far as cars and vests and things of that sort, that and any piece of technology equipment that those police officers need. And that's where I'm hoping that we can come together as a city and a state to focus on how we can make sure we can get the correct resources for our police department.
You know, Amy mentioned this earlier, just the dissatisfaction overall with city leadership. And I'd say that dissatisfaction is pretty high. If you ask just about anybody who is a resident of St. Louis City, what do you think of leadership here? They're probably going to give you a negative answer. How do you come out of that? And it doesn't seem like an easy chore because I think people feel that way about most of city leadership. So is there a pathway out of it?
Absolutely. I think communicating with and being open to media is number one. And there's been a lot of time during this past administration where we haven't been able to get our message out. I think we get past by having a vision for St. Louis that people can believe in, we can get past a lot of the things that we've past the distrust between government and our people right now. So yes, with the right leadership, I think people will believe in the future of our city.
So why is trash not getting picked up and our potholes not being filled?
Well, the number one excuse we keep hearing is that we don't have enough people to work. That we have too many vacancies, and we have a $42 million surplus in our city budget because of the amount of vacancies and of positions in our city budget we planned for but haven't filled. I haven't had a vacancy in my office in over 4 years because I pay people what they're worth and I give them the technology they need to succeed. And we've done this by reducing the amount of full-time employees and increasing productivity by reducing the amount of full-time employees. So I can solve that problem. So we've been hearing that we can't hire folks. I hire people pretty well. I retain them, and I want to expand it to the rest of City Hall.
As far as citywide goes, how much authority or autonomy would you have to set pay, you know, to set salary, or if you're paying hourly, how would you be able to do that?
I wouldn't say full authority, but let's say 70%. So you'd have the ability to create a budget that sets pay ranges for each employee. You have the ability to set a budget that reduces the amount of full-time employment. Well, only about 80% of our actual employees that we budgeted for, do we have actually hired? So I would reduce those amount of FTEs and spread that money across the budget in order to increase salaries and get better quality and not necessarily have to go after so much quantity.
How much salary increase are we talking? Is it that the mayor right now said with the money we have, we can't get people, everyone's having a hard time hiring people? Why is your approach any different?
Because we have to be competitive. My approach is that I don't believe that government can be any different than the private sector. And a lot of time, government leaders compete with other governments and not think about the other opportunity costs that are folks that can move it into the private sector where they know they can get paid more. So we've got to compete in a workforce that we know we're competing with everyone in the St. Louis region and some areas outside of the St. Louis region. So it's going to be, we usually do about a 2-3% raise per year. We got to be more aggressive in the departments that we know people are talking about, these customer facing departments, police department, civilian service board, the streets department, 10-15% raises. We need, and we need to be aggressive with doing that as soon as possible. Signing bonuses have also been a part of some hiring, like especially in the streets department, and that hasn't necessarily worked because the salary has been too low. So we've got to be more aggressive and targeted with that aggressiveness with salary increases.
St. Louis mayoral candidate Michael Butler is with us, and as we talked about at the top, and a topic of discussion for us for weeks after the snowstorm, and the fact that many parts of the city were not handled, people couldn't get out, they couldn't go to places they needed to, trash was piling up, all that stuff. The current mayor did apologize for the poor response. So let's say this happens again and we know a snowstorm is coming. How do you better prepare for it? And how do you have a plan in place ahead of time?
So I would direct $400,000 a year to a special projects fund within our budget that will then stack up over certain years. So we get these storms probably every 5 to 8 years, and we'd have about $2 million to then hire contractors that we'd already have on contract with a deposit to come in and help us with our side streets. I commit to not just doing the arterial and the secondary streets, to doing both of those and side streets. I've always felt that way over the past decade. Why we can't provide that service to our entire city. So that's going to cost about $2 million, by a little bit less. But stacking up every year, we'd have the money for that because the city, that's on the city budget committee and the mayor, they reduced snow removal by $600,000 this year. Mm-hmm. They have the reasons why they did that, but they didn't invest that into something else with snow removal. They just put it somewhere else. But we have the money to save up every year to be prepared for these big storms.
I know people talk about crime with the issues facing the city, but another thing driving people out, driving residents out, are the schools. There's a lot of dysfunction in the St. Louis public schools. What kind of pressure, what kind of impact can the mayor's office have on a objectively dysfunctional school system?
So I worked in the school system. I was a teacher for 2 years before I became a state legislator. My grandparents were 30-year teachers in St. Louis public schools. I have a sister who lives in St. Louis public schools. I'm saying that to base that my understanding of how to improve the school system is as a practitioner, not just as a politician. So what I would do, number one, is appropriate for us to support wraparound services. And I want to use our RAMS fund to put wraparound services in about 20 low-income schools. And what wraparound services are, having a social worker and providing at every school a full-time nurse, full-time social worker, and a full-time therapist that helps with kids' mental health and get them access to all the nonprofit programs that we have. So 30% of our students are dealing with housing insecurity in St. Louis public schools, one out of almost three. About that same amount of students are dealing with food insecurity. These are two issues that the city government can help out with. These are two issues that are based upon poverty, and I want to reduce the effect of poverty on our students. And that's an appropriate way, without being a superintendent, that I think the mayor can move in to help in our schools. So we'll let the superintendent and the school district focus on reading and math scores. We'll focus on making sure every kid goes to school ready to learn and not be focused on how they're going to eat that day.
Lastly, we did talk a little bit about the polling that came out recently, and we have the two main candidates, the one that everybody's talked about, Kara Spencer, of course, the incumbent Mayor Jones. What is your plan to try and make up some ground?
My plan is to campaign. I think that's what campaigns are for. Let folks know who I am and what my plan is. What I love about St. Louis City right now is our approval voting. It allows folks to, I'm not taking away from anybody, it allows folks to vote for more than one person. So if they like one candidate and they like the plan for mine as well, they can vote for both of us and we can both be in the general election to find out which plan is better. So I plan to just let folks know what we good we can do in St. Louis City and how I'm the right person for it. And it's been working very well to get on the get more votes on the ballot.
Recorder of deeds and candidate for mayor in the city of St. Louis, Michael Butler. Thank you for stopping by and introducing yourself to us and to St. Louis.
Thank you. I thought I was going to hear the horn real quick, though. There you go. The bump, bump, bump.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, very regal. It is such a regal job.
It's so regal. It's like everything else, like alderman, mayor, comptroller.
Okay.
But the recorder of deeds.
I love it. Thank you guys for the time. It was very enjoyable.
It's a trumpet y'all. With a flag, a banner
there
hanging.
There you go.
It has to be one of those. A bugle? No, I think it's a trumpet.
A bugle.
A bugle is not a bugle. It's a trumpet.
I don't know instruments.
And it's got the flag.
Yeah, it's the flag that hangs off of it. Yes, that's it. Michael Butler, again, thank you. The primary for the mayor of St. Louis is March 4th. And then, of course, the election is April 8th. Get out there and vote, man. Go participate, would you? It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, Joe Biden, remember Joe Biden?
Oh, yeah.
Not president and still alive. He just signed with the Hollywood Talent Agency, Creative Artist Agency, and it's a pretty elite agency.
CAA.
They work with a lot of prestigious political figures like Barack and Michelle Obama. And Joe Biden worked with the agency before he was president. They helped coordinate his book tour and all of that marketing. And so now he is back at it. I don't know what he is promoting.
Well, they usually, and I did not, you know, you don't think about this, but politicians with a high enough profile will get a talent agent after their political careers, and then they'll, you know, do books and speaking engagements, and that agent is the one responsible for booking all of that for them, which you don't really think about that. I never think about it, but that's part of the reality.
I mean, it makes sense. If you're going to do things, you need someone to book it and take care of all those things and make the connection. It's just, I don't know. That's fine.
It is. It's still weird to hear about it.
Enjoy life with Jill.
See, but this goes to what we were talking about before the election and before he dropped out, that it's just for some people who do this job and have done it for decades, it's just difficult to give it up. That it's in them, right? They want to be out there. They want to be in politics. They want to be forward-facing. They want people to see them. So when they retire or they drop out, they have to do something else.
I would disappear so fast.
So would I.
You would think that.
So would I.
That it was spontaneous combustion. I would be out like trout. Man,
if I won that Mega Millions or the Powerball.
I don't even have to be Mega Millions, just millions. If I won regular millions.
I would pull the Goodwill Hunting where somebody would come to my door to pick me up and I'm just not there. No goodbye, no nothing.
Yeah.
I'm gone. That's what I would do.
You're going to be calling Michael Kelly or John Hancock like 10 minutes before the show and be like, we can't find Amy. And then you'll never hear from me again.
A guy that we haven't heard from in a while, and I cannot wait to have him in studio because a lot of places are opening and closing around the St. Louis area. George Mayhee, the dining editor for St. Louis Magazine. We're going to talk about all the good stuff that's happening in St. Louis in the restaurant scene next on KMOX.